Hi, my name is Robert, and I'm an optimist at heart. I believe in technology as a force for good, not just in business, but in how we work, live, and shape a better future.
The Optimist. Conversations with leaders and industries shaping Europe's future. Exploring the ideas and innovations driving progress across the continent.
Welcome to The Optimist, presented to you by Tech by Handelsblatt. I'm Felix Zeltner, your host, and I'm so excited today to take you into another surprising episode on this show where I thought, this can't be true, but it is. The last episode was around virtual worlds, and this one is about bureaucracy and the most mundane task and the huge business opportunity that lies beneath them. Our guest today is Robert Rosen, who manages Germany at ServiceNow. So, first of all, what is ServiceNow? It's a company that you might have interacted with without even knowing. They're a software company originally from California with a strong footprint in Europe and Germany, where they also recently acquired several startups to grow further. And ServiceNow takes over these very mundane tasks that all businesses have to do, like IT or human resources or customer service or legal, and it makes them easier, faster, it automates and puts them onto the cloud. And a lot of that is in big, big systems, in very complex systems. Imagine you're a patient in a healthcare system, or a parent or student or teacher interacting with a school, or a citizen interacting with your government. That's where ServiceNow is at home, and that is precisely what makes Robert so optimistic. He says in Germany and in Europe, there's a massive opportunity in improving just that. The everyday, all day. And if you are an entrepreneur or investor thinking about where to go next, this podcast is for you. Robert Rosen, welcome.
Thank you.
Robert, how many people roughly around the world are using ServiceNow on a daily basis, just to understand the size of your operation?
I don't have the exact numbers, but it goes into millions, right? We are a big platform. We are in government. We are around the world. People are using us in different projects. Big logistics companies are using us in tracking, connecting the different logistics systems to track and to offer different customer services, right? Other organizations using us in finance because they don't get the people. People don't find controller interested in working in Excel, but having rather than an automated system, a smaller company in the Mittelstand leverage us for legal services. Because guess what? The legal department, they're getting so much requests, mm-hmm. and 80% of the stuff is always the same. And if the platform is offering a good self-service automated, it helps a lot. And those people can really concentrate on more value-add questions in the business, right? It goes on and on. I think at the end, it remains we are platform. We love complexity. We connect the different systems, tools, and environments, and then automate and make it easy for the end user, customer, employee. And this is always together, right? And that's right. Mm-hmm. People love using our technology if it's well implemented because it's easy. It helps me. You know?
I find the phrase, we love complexity, is so German. I think the Germans are really the ones who would say that and then just dive deep and figure it out.
Yes.
Well, but you're company is transatlantic, a little bit like me, myself, and my family. I live in the US in New York City. Your company has an office here, even. Your headquarters are on the other coast, so 4 and more hours by airplane from here in Santa Clara, California, on the coast. You are, of course, responsible for the Alps, for the North Sea, for the middle of Germany, for the beauty of Central Europe. And I know from my own experience that work cultures between California and Germany can be pretty different. You are not in your first rodeo when it comes to working between continents. You worked with Microsoft before, so you have a lot of experience in bringing different work cultures together. And I'm super curious to know this bridge that is needed, not only across the pond, like literally between very different work cultures. How do you build that every day? Do you maybe have some advice for people who are listening or in a similar role like myself? What is a good way to bridge the different work cultures between Central Europe and California?
Yeah, it's a very good question and a very relevant question. And it's a question I'm dealing since even my studies. But I think it's in a good question because I think both is relevant, and bringing it together, this brings the power. Each can learn from each side. And for sure, often in big transformation processes, I see it. But I think core is solid communication, to the point, and also joint values, right? Joint values and a joint goal. And I think particularly in those times where we are, we could learn maybe more from that we can be optimistic, that we can go with a positive spirit, right? While for sure taking care that there are not any traps or so. Balancing it, I think, is the key word. And I think for me, it's always important to see what is the mindset, right? And sometimes let's do a step back in a project and say, hey, before we go now in any technical discussions, before we raise our hands for risk, before we are too optimistic about the ambition, are we on the same page? Yeah? And sometimes what I feel is really helpful is to define a joint North Star and saying, hey, this is what we want, right? And this can be a little bit more ambitious because guess what? If you shoot for higher, you will end up higher. That's my...
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Germans can learn to be a bit more ambitious from the Californians.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yes. It's my personal point of view, right? So, and what I see in the projects. But then I think working together and being also frank and also giving feedback in a constructive way, this is helping. So really, as you see, platform of platform, and there's a lot associated with change management because we are changing workflow, we are changing processes, and this is people, right? And now AI comes, so we need to communicate, we need to make a step back, maybe to make two steps forward. But I think it's a unique chance.
Would you say that American companies have an easier time transforming than German companies?
No, I wouldn't go that far. Because there's also in both there's good things and things where you need to reflect. Sometimes if you go too fast, then you need to go fast back, right? So fail fast for sure, but I think it's about the learning. And look how profound knowledge we have in Germany, how much engineering knowledge we have, how we are thinking through that things are sustainable, not only in 2025, but also then the years beyond. I'm not saying that the discussions are getting easier, but I think if the right mindset and the right leadership, and in my role, I need to take care, and this is also in big complex projects, the first thing I'm looking is really the leadership and the mindset. And you can feel it, right? If you have a complex project and the mindset is not there, maybe do a step back. Maybe let's have visit the teams coming together, eating a pizza, talking, getting to know each other, right? We are back in a more office way. It's important, right? So people need to understand each other.
Yeah, and I feel like especially now where it feels like the Atlantic is widening and the gap is getting deeper, it sounds like what you're doing and your approach is more important than ever. And on a daily basis also, I'm sure that you are have built a lot of experience of maybe not letting politics get too much in the way of this very important mission that you're on. ServiceNow, interestingly enough, is embedded within the public sector, both in the US and in Europe. So you are impacting how citizens on both sides of the Atlantic interact with the government. Can you name an example of how you're technology is changing how citizens interact with their government? At maybe at this very moment, it's morning here in the US, afternoon in Germany.
I mean, we are working with a lot of organizations in the public sector. It's in a really big demand, right? Because there are many reasons for that, because there's a lot of people going into retirement, in particular in public sector. So people work needs to get done. So there's a driver also behind, but also for sure as a citizen, we have different expectation to our public sector because we see what is possible, right, in the world. And so everyone is looking for digital first service and how we citizen can be better served. And so we have a variety of projects. Yeah. In France, we're working with the city of Bordeaux. They leverage us to manage all the carbon footprint issues with digital services. In Germany, we are working with schools. We are working with big cities like Munich. We are working with the Bundesanstalt für Arbeit.
Where basically all the unemployed and also the employment structures in Germany are being managed.
Yep.
Institute for Work would maybe be a good translation.
Yeah, absolutely. We are working with the Institute of Work, right? So to really help to automate connecting the different systems, so to serve the citizen. You know? And here it comes again to the same point, right? There's so many administrative processes. Yeah, you need a work permit. You need this document from your city or from the government. We have funds, investment funds to be worked. So here the platform can really help connect the complexity and simplify and also help to get the work done. Yeah? So let's not underestimate that we see a big shift in the workforce. So
when I, let's say I live in Munich and I need a daycare spot for my newborn, and I go to the city's web portal and I'm starting to apply digitally, chances are that I touch at some point code or some sort of software that you have written.
Yeah, I mean, we still have room to grow, yeah, for sure. But exactly here, we can help, right? And also keep you informed as a citizen. Okay, yes, Felix, we understood this, your request. By the way, this is where we are in the process. Or because how often it is that you make a request and then you hear nothing.
Nothing happens.
Nothing happened, or you don't know. So maybe just an information. We hear you. We're on. By the way, estimated delivery will be. So this is not difficult, yeah. We worked in public sector during COVID when we had vaccination topics and we helped on short notice. Mm-hmm. But there's so many examples. And the good thing is, I think now people see the problem. People know that we need to act. And now I think it comes really to the point of realizing it. Huh? We were working with a lot of partners here together. We are working in particular with Stackit as a sovereign cloud solution to also address the needs the public sector has. So this is very promising going forward.
Stackit, also one of these companies that I think are speaking of how Central Europe is developing its own technology now and building this digital sovereignty. I think Stackit is also a company from Germany building cloud services. And as, just to give some context here, I saw a really intriguing presentation last year from Jonas Andrulis, the founder of CEO of Aleph Alpha. And his entire presentation was about what you just said. The public sector not being able to recruit enough people to fill open roles, while at the same time bleeding people, losing people that are retiring. And he made the case that we are looking at hundreds of thousands of open, unfilled roles in the near future. I have to be honest, I was shocked when I saw that. And what a great pitch for a software company to then come in and say, the only solution is AI and my company. However, I wanted to ask you what your outlook is on this, because as you just said, you are basically looking day and night into this problem that as citizens, we won't have enough other humans to interact with in the very near future when it comes to our most basic needs. What is your outlook on this? What do you think is going to happen with us as citizens interacting with our governments and how technology is changing it?
I think we are really going into in a very interesting time period, right? I think we're coming now really to the realization and the urgency is there and people are implementing. But I think in the next 3 to 5 years, we will see a fundamental change, right? It will take definitely more than 3 to 5 years. But things are moving now, and we're seeing more and more good examples also in Germany with ESERP and tools and possibilities. So by the way, technology is not the limiting factor here in that. It's a mindset, it's a change, it's a willingness to drive that forward, which often hinders us to be faster. But I think what a unique opportunity in Europe, in Germany, right? Because we always said, oh, everything is already done with AI. No, we're just starting, right? So there's huge opportunity for startups, there's huge opportunities for companies like Stackit, there's huge opportunity for sure for companies like us to jointly drive it forward and find solutions. And I think to talk, to share about it, this will be important. But I'm super optimistic, and all the indication and growth what I'm seeing is tremendous. So public sector is really picking up. My point of view is it really because of the pain which work needs to be get done. People are really waking up and really bringing it to the street. Can we be faster? Definitely. But let's not underestimate the big opportunity for the ecosystem, the big opportunity for startups. It's not only 2-3 software companies doing and realizing this big transformation.
You said two things that I just want to follow up on. You said, A, if you're an entrepreneur right now or an investor, and you're thinking where there's a strong growth market and opportunity in Germany, Central Europe, think about helping the public sector.
Yeah.
Think about helping the everyday interactions between citizens and government that used to be kind of not cool and nobody was really interested in it, boring bureaucracy. That is a huge growth market. So that's number one I found really interesting. The other thing you said in the beginning was the next 3 to 4 years, there's going to be dramatic, drastic change. And I just wanted to understand, what do you mean by that? Do you have an example? Like, for example, you, Robert, what are you going to do in 3 years completely differently from today as a citizen interacting with your government?
I think we come to the point that as a citizen, I can really do it all really digitally in a fast way, that the apps and the interaction and the service and how the service is fulfilled is much more transparent and not a broken experience. In the worst case, I enter something digitally and then someone else is printing it out and we are from digital back to paper, maybe back to digital. I think those things will be gone. Okay. I'm sure that in 3 years we can have a different service as a citizen, particularly in the big cities, right? And also the Bitkom is driving it forward. So we're discussing it, we're moving forward. I think also as a parent in the schools, right? How the school is interacting with the children and so on. Also here's a tremendous need, right, to automate, because there's some basic stuff, right? I need to communicate, okay, here the teacher is unfortunately not available. Things like this could be pushed. Now a lot of parents need to go into the portal to see, is there any change every night? Things can be much more fluent. I think this is not rocket science, and I see promising examples with schools and here. And then when it comes to health, I think the same, right? So here already we see the e-receipt and so on, that things are moving and technology can help, right? In all the administrative work with the private insurance companies, with all insurance companies.
So the e-receipt, really interesting. I think Germany, as of this year, right, is digitalizing all prescriptions in the healthcare sector. And I find it kind of funny that you started by saying, you know what, one thing is changing when I interact with my government, they won't print out my emails anymore. I can promise you that. I think that's a really nice way to look into the future.
Yeah.
I was saying much less paper, much less time lost, much more efficiency, and in the end, also less labor that's going into this.
Yeah.
And I find it fascinating that you were talking about schools, because it made me think of, you know, the way I interact with my kids' schools here in the US, where less data privacy restrictions are, of course, leading to much more digitalization. And I was wondering, as you sit on both sides of the Atlantic again, do you have have you found a strategy to deal with the fact that Europeans, Germans are so much more aware of what privacy is worth when it comes to data?
It's a very good question. And this is an ongoing discussion. Just to give you an example, yesterday night with an important customer, we had an escalation because their data private officer said, oh, well, we cannot use this and so on. But then we had to go back to the business and saying, hey, if we don't get this information, we cannot train our artificial intelligence. And I think here, again, this is so bridging. And then we made a stop, one step back. What do we want to achieve with the project, right? Okay, we want to go there. So we need to be open. So if there's no risk and there was no risk, then let's talk again with privacy and say, hey, guys, we're at the testing and we're building this up. We double checked it from our side. We go, because otherwise we will never succeed the big mission we have. I cannot give now all the details, but this is daily.
I can hear how you're talking around the case, but what I of course understand is the more data I give away as an individual, the more a large language model or another AI model can learn about me, and the better it can help me. The less I give, the worse the model will be, but the more privacy I have. And it seems to me almost like a dilemma.
Yeah, and I see both, because often what I discover in those discussions on a private, in a private life, we are willing to share, to contribute, and we see the benefit. And okay, sometimes we're complaining because the AI is proposing so much. I just had a discussion with my daughter. She said, hey, I need to change my profile. And we discussed about it, right? Because the AI brings up, and this is dangerous, and this we need to educate people, and this is sometimes overwhelming. But what we see,
what was the app that your daughter used that you were discussing?
No, we were basically on all the YouTube settings and what it's suggesting and so on.
Okay,
but what I want to bring across in private, we are already much further advanced. I'm not saying that's always good, and when it comes to business, we say, oh, this is a problem. For sure, basic concepts of privacy need to be respected, and there meter security. Otherwise, that's a strong point, and this makes sense. The only thing I think, which is sometimes we see, that we're getting into endless discussion. And I say, great, guys, we can discuss now privacy for 1 year, but don't tell me this is about speed and getting things realized. And we sometimes in innovative projects, we don't know yet the end result. But if we are not starting it, then maybe someone else is doing it, and it is also not helping. So balancing, I think, is in communicating and getting back to what's our North Star, what we want jointly to achieve, is always super important. And often people forget then the project, right? And then we need to say, hey, privacy, but we have this in mind, and make them part also. Hey, you are also part of that vision. But if you stop everything, we will not succeed here with 60 people in the project, right? You see what I mean?
So you're trying to cut the discussions short.
Yeah.
And look at the facts and don't get too emotional about privacy, rather looking at the things that need to be done. And also comparing it to the private life, I think, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because while we are probably, and I always like to compare it with WhatsApp and Signal, while we probably like to be all on Signal and be super private, most of us still use WhatsApp.
Yeah.
It's much less private, but everybody else is on there. We like using it. We're used to it.
I agree.
And we don't think too much about the terms and conditions that we signed up for. Really interesting. Do you actually think, you know, all this automation that is taking place, do you think a software company like ServiceNow could be also largely automated itself? Do you think there is a robot, or let's say a Rosellen AI, which sounds more elegant, in the future that will just manage Germany, and you have maybe interact with that AI once a week and give it some new information, and the rest is done for you?
There will be definitely new ways, and agentic AI is there and so on. But I think it will be always crucial that there's a strong interaction between the human and the potential and the AI. And we talk, and I see it more about the power couple, right? The combination of both make it meaningful. We see it also if we do regular surveys, and in our customer survey, we see that 40% is saying, hey, we need the interaction. And for sure, the technology will dramatically help us, but it will be always a meaningful combination between human and artificial intelligence.
Robert, I feel like you're lucky with ServiceNow because you're on the right side of this of this change that is happening, of this transformation. And you're helping so many organizations, governments, institutions to change with the times. What I found fascinating when I looked into ServiceNow and what the organization is doing right now is that you're expanding like crazy. I just read there were acquisitions in Berlin, which is still being publicized highly in Germany because it doesn't happen that often that a Californian company acquires startup in Berlin. You bought a company in Prague in the Czech Republic, and you just days ago, pretty much before our recording, announced that you are planning to acquire Moveworks, a Silicon Valley company for billions of dollars. Why does ServiceNow buy so many companies at the moment? What's the goal? Where is this going?
I mean, as the platform and the technology is rapidly expanding and in going in different from risk management, where I need to comply to compliance and ESG, to finance, to human resources, to customer interactions. We want to help our customer to innovate even faster. And I mean, in Germany alone, we did three acquisitions, right? We acquired G2K in Berlin, where we're working on IoT solutions in stores, where we see things happening and then tasks and things are happening. We acquired last year Ration, where we really helped the enterprise search capabilities, all fueled with AI, because we feel that end users have always a challenge sometimes in big corporations to find information. Hey, now if you have an alternative with AI-powered possibilities, what a big benefit, right? And yeah, we also acquired Swarm 64 in Berlin to now we have a unique database, which is 70 times faster, right, in average. So very good technologies, but it's also a commitment. And it's about, in most importantly, it's a commitment to our customers so that they can innovate faster, that they can combine. And as we are a platform, it's important that we offer end-to-end possibilities. That doesn't mean that a customer needs to use ServiceNow in all, but at least we offer choice, and that's the reason, right? And we always take when we acquire, we reprogram, we reset it up so that it remains an integrated, a really integrated solution. That's a big promise. One data model, one architecture. So, and it's a big differentiator at ServiceNow.
When you meet leaders these days, you said in the beginning of our conversation that, you know, as a transatlantic company, you have to deal with a lot of stuff these days. What is your favorite question that you ask leaders, or what is a challenge that you address them with? I'm sure you have something that you bring in your suitcase whenever you come into a company. Maybe you have some favorite question or some favorite challenge that you can share with us here.
For sure, I'm prepared, but it's always good to hear really where the person is in the mindset, because I think some companies really have a tough time, right, to drive restructuring, and it's just changing, and it's so to see. But then also immediately to see, hey, how they see technology, how they can leverage technology to create maybe a more optimistic, sustainable future, and is their way, right? So this is my main topics, right? And then for sure, okay, in terms of culture, change, how we dealing, those three questions I'm really most interested, right? This is building bridges, and this is helping, because sometimes many companies go new ways. And so this is critical. Yeah. And then talking about the opportunity, right? Talking about being optimistic. We are in the fog here in the call, the optimist. Being optimistic, there's no reason why not being it, right?
Well, a lot of people would say there are a lot of reasons to not be optimistic. So what do you tell them?
I mean, we have so much new possibilities, right? And AI is now defining technology of our generation, and companies which are taking this seriously, they will heavily benefit. And this is a chance for transforming in existing companies, but this is also a chance to build new companies and playing a role. And with all the knowledge we have here, with all the university networks we have, so much good possibilities. We just need to see them and take the opportunity. And I think the current situation is absolutely helping us. Even, I'm not saying that's easy, and it's sometimes concerning, definitely, what we're seeing. But in our environment, which we can influence at work or with our customers, partners, hey, let's use it. Let's work together. Let's group together. Let's drive it forward. Huh?
Mm-hmm. I think you gave in our podcast today, you gave already two really important pieces of advice for people who are listening, who are maybe leaders or who are building companies right now. One is look into the automation of annoying stuff that we're dealing with daily, because those mundane tasks are the ones that are really the easiest to tackle right now.
Exactly.
And the second advice you gave was look into the public sector, look into the interactions between citizen and government, because there things will be changing over the next couple of years in a speed that is unprecedented. Is there more advice that you give to leaders? Is there maybe more patterns that you see, or one more or two more opportunities that you can share with us today?
Yeah, I mean, customer service, right? In the US, we see different attention in Asia as well. And I think this is a huge opportunity in Germany. And customer service or customer interaction, that this is well made, that people are thinking through, anticipating topics the customer have, and really serve in a good way.
It's funny because I feel like customer service in Germany is looked down upon so often. Many people who work in customer service are not as well paid as in the United States and in other places. So I feel like there is a huge mentality shift that you're describing, maybe needed, maybe ongoing in the customer service field as well. And I love that you said in the beginning of the podcast, we love complex problems. And I feel like you have identified three very complex problems that there are huge opportunities. And as you say, reasons to be optimistic about. And funnily enough, it's not fancy stuff. It's our daily interactions with customer service. It's our daily interactions with the government. And it's our most mundane and annoying and repetitive tasks. I love that so much.
Yep.
Thank you, Robert. And thank you for taking time to be on The Optimist, Robert Rosen, and for being an optimist. And I'll close with saying, see you in Heilbronn.
See you in Heilbronn. Thank you so much.
For listening to The Optimist. For more insights and updates about tech, visit us at tech-europe.org. The Optimist is produced by Tech by Handelsblatt. Music by Christian Heinemann. Stay curious.